Well, I just say a few quick things. One is, again, an enormous thank you to Steve and Tobias for making sure that this happened. Another is to Marsha Brooks for making sure that we were well fed while it was happening. And Edna Stewart, I was about to say, and the entire Adult Ed Committee, thank you. We are also obviously blessed by having so many gifted teachers in our community. Just naming the people who have taught, besides the two of us, Rabbi Bachner participated, Cantor Martha Birnbaum taught, Naomi Seidman taught, Joel Gerwine taught, Claire Sherman taught, Uri Alter taught, and Carol Dorff taught. This is a very, very special moment. We also each taught each other by showing up and not remaining silent, which is not how we learn. So it is just a tremendous testimony that Torah is alive here, and it should remain so. And the final word of introduction is the only way. Marsha, we thank you twice. Now we get to do with you in the room. There is, as part of the Siyum refreshments afterwards, because you can never get enough. We're only doing this because of Rabbi Kelman's work. We only have this machzer. Well, we're doing it because it's a good machzer. We only have this good machzer that we are lucky enough to celebrate because of 12 years of incredible work from Rabbi Kelman. And so to not take the moment to thank him in advance of any questions and answers would be remiss. Now that I'm done saying nice things about you.
And it only weighs 2 pounds.
It weighs less.
No, excuse me. It weighs less than the Harlow. Wow. How do you like that?
But it's heavier.
But it's heavier. It's got more words.
I'm going to ask the first question. Leslie Gordon's going to ask the second question, and then we'll open it up. Mine I'm going to keep short, if I can say it in English. So I'm looking. If you have a machzer, you're welcome to look down. If not, the question will hopefully still make sense. At the end of the Avodah service, the reenactment... I'm getting there. Page 334. What a community, man. You don't need rabbis to call the page. At the end of the Avodah service, we have this reenactment of the Kohen's work, the color, the beauty. There are certain things here, certain things not, but I wanted to ask about one specific line. I wanted to ask Rabbi Kelman to reflect on it. That at the end of this return into the moment of the Avodah, not a historical recounting, but doing it somehow ourselves, the final line of 334, which is on the same page as the Avodah, we say, Achen hizkarnu malalot kedumim, we have recalled what the ancients did, and then we say, right afterwards, aval zechitanu ba'avodah acheret, but we have merited with a different worship. And the next page are the proof texts about how we can connect with God without the temple. And so my question is a little bit pointed because my deepest desire, just as an individual davener for Yom Kippur in general, but definitely for the Avodah, is to be in that moment, which of course my modern self doesn't want to do. I don't want to do any sacrifices, but the majesty of it for me is threatened by the final line on 334 and then the next page. So I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Okay. Let me back up a second. And talk for a minute about Pesach. Let me talk for a minute about Pesach. Right? So all of you have participated in probably the first, what's it called in education? I forget what it's called in education already. The first experiential segment of learning unit in education, which is the Seder. Right, reenacted. You try and get into that moment. Now, the Seder is really quite easy to do because you all know that food is coming next, and it's easier to do because it's pretty dramatic. You've all heard the story thousands of times with the sea and Pharaoh and the chair. You know, you even see it on television. This you have no food afterward. At least delayed gratification is, you know, a ways still. Number one. Number two. There are no movies about this. You know, I have yet to see somebody produce a movie about the Kohen and the, you know, and the blood being dripped on everybody. And it's, that's the second thing. The third is, this is probably one, if not the most strangest of moments to try and get into it, in terms of what Rabbi Creditor was talking about before. I will confess that I've never been able to do it, except for the last part about Shnat Chaim, Shnat this, Shnat that. Lovely. That part I love. Is it for me? This is really one of the most difficult things, and the proof text of that is actually the last line of the traditional avoda in the first place, which is V'alanshei Hasharona Ya'amer Yiratzon Avoda Shelo Ya'asu Batehem Kivrehem, that the people of Sharon, he would say, may it be your will, Adonai, your God, that their homes not become their graves. Now, where's that come from? That only comes from the fact that he, the Kohen Gadol, was in essence trying to say, look, we've just been through something enormous. Let me now get it real. And the real is, you folks who have come from Sharon down to here, here's a special blessing for you. Because what you've just gone through in the first part is intangible. It's frankly the second time we've been through it already. It's not the first time. And I, the Kohen Gadol, have to have some way of making it real for you. So it seems to me that last line and the attempt here was to do that, which is to say, okay, we've been through one of the weirdest pieces in all of Jewish liturgy. Very strange. Really unknown to a lot of people, the Kachaya Omer, yeah, we got all of that, Achata Acha, you have all of that stuff, and it's really, you know, it's in the back of my historical memory of going to shul when I was a kid and hearing the chazan say, achat v'achas, achat, you know, all of that in Ashkenazes. and to hear all of that, but I couldn't relate. It was far from my abilities to be able to relate to it. And I think what we did here, by the way, the reason for I think, we've done this for 12 years. If you think that I can remember a lot of the reasons why we did a lot of the stuff in here, not a chance. Especially the older I get. And I believe that what we did at the very end here was to try and say, okay, we've now been through something. Let's now try and get it a little bit into a way where someone living in the 21st century can relate to what's going on above.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay. Leslie's question, and then we'll open the floor. Leslie's question is based on the translation of the words of Hineni, specifically the word Hineni. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at the Machzor, one of them is on page 140. Hineni is translated on the left-hand side of the page, here I stand. And so her question is, why did the committee translate Hineni, here I stand, rather than here I am, since the root is Hine?
Okay. Let me respond to you by responding to Uri Alter.
Wait, I want to make sure this is working.
Now you want to make sure it's working?
Yeah, I do.
Just for what I say and not for what you...
I'm going to play it for Uri.
I got it. You can say whatever. That's fine. And if you were here, we're friends. So he was actually my bunk counselor at Camp Ramah. So, but we don't talk about that. So here's the thing. Let me see if I can do it justice, because... Sorry? Thank you. All right. Let me see if I can do this justice, because I did not hear what he had to say completely, but I want to respond to what I think he said. And what I believe that he said was he prefers the literal translation, a much more exacting translation to the Hebrew than what we did here. And you know what? I agree with him. I totally agree with him in Bible. That is, if I want to study Tanakh, I want to know with precision what the Hebrew says, because I have to unpack the Hebrew as best as I can. First step is a literal, as close to the literal translation as I can get. However, that's not the purpose of this translation. This translation we did, and the criteria, the primary criteria for our translating was, can you pray from it? Now, if you say, can you pray from it?
Unless you can't pray from it.
What?
Leslie can't pray from it as it's stated.
No, hold on, let me get there. Let me get to Leslie. Right now I'm only on Uri. What I want to suggest is, this is prayer language. This isn't biblical translation. I understand that, but there are two different ways of translating for different purposes. Okay? Now to Leslie. When Hineni is done, there are many congregations, not ours, but there are many congregations where the person, the Shaliach Tzibur, who is saying Hineni, starts at the back of the congregation and walks all the way down. Right? I've seen it in a few places. I haven't seen it. I'm not sure how prevalent the tradition is, but one of the things that we tried to do was to try and give voice to as many traditions as we knew that were being practiced in conservative synagogues. That's one of them. So where it says, Hineni, here I stand, that is the words not of us. We're not standing. That's the word of the person who is a Shaliach Tzibur, who is literally walking down that aisle. I think, and I'll phrase it that way, I think that's why we added that word in there.
Thanks. Questions? Edna?
Edna.
Research.
Okay. In that case, I want you to imagine a room with a table about, you know, a little bit larger than this. We worked at the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York, and they would always shove us into a different room. But it was a room where we were seated around this, and most of the time we were using a projector. Projector and computer and on the screen in the later years. In the earlier years, it was something else. On the table were a couple of dozen different machzorim. One of them was called the Goldschmidt. Goldschmidt isn't really a machzor. Goldschmidt did a magnificent job. What he did was he studied and took all of the traditions, the old traditions, not the new ones, but the oldest of traditions. He looked at those machzorim and he recorded in his book what the versions were, what the words were in each of those machzorim.
What year?
What year what? Beginning of the last century, I think, something like that, a little bit more, probably around the 30s, 40s, I'm not sure exactly, you remember? But what he did was he recorded all of that. We used that as the primary text. Or we went to the library, because that's where we were, or to the rare book room, and took out the original and looked at it and said, is this really what we want? Is this really the, what I would call the Ur text, the primary text that we have? Because we don't have Machzorim before the 12th century or so. There weren't any of those. There weren't Machzorim then. But they only began to be written at around the 12th century. And we would hold them in our hands and look at them and decide this, what the primary text was, and more importantly, which of the versions that exist best fits us in the 21st century, and which is the best version linguistically that we have. Because between the 12th century and now, there are so many versions of prayers or expansions of prayers or piyutim that have just come in here in a very corrupt state. That's what we did. He's calling on people, not me.
In Naomi's session a couple nights ago, we all got our panties in quite a twist over Unetanatopet. And I just like
mine are fine. Go ahead.
I just like to know a little bit what went on in deciding the framing of that particular section of the liturgy. Leaving out the introduction about Rabbi Amnon of Mainz and you know not having a heavy sword particularly.
Okay, so Unetana Tokef, right?
Yeah.
Everyone know that the question is, how did it get to be the way we did it here?
What went on, yeah.
What went on? Let me just suggest the following, once I find it. Anybody know what page it's on? One what?
143.
Thank you. I need the visual cue. All right, let's back up a second, okay? If you look at 143 and 144, because it's all part of until you get to the Kedusha, which on the bottom of the page, everything that you see in the Hebrew is the traditional text. There is nothing different there. In other words, all of the Hebrew is the same in Harlow, Silverman, Boxer. Every one of them have exactly that text. Okay? What is different are the notes on the side. Okay? So the fact that we... Let me see if I can remember what we did here. Yeah, why we didn't put in the thing about Rav Amnon? My hunch is, because I don't precisely remember, is that it is well known by scholars through all over that he never wrote it. It's quite fictitious, and it was based on stuff that he could never have written because he never lived in the age in which it was done in the first place, in which it makes its appearance. So that's the one thing. I mean, it is a very famous legend that is simply that, a legend with no historical basis whatsoever. We probably made a mistake and should have given some kind of line in there about that, but it would have raised as much of your panties, as you said.
Excuse me, liar.
I didn't. Yeah, turn that off. she said it.
I don't know what to say.
I don't know. You don't know.
Ire.
Thank you. It would have raised as much ire as eliminating it. So there was a no win on that one. But frankly, the Hebrew is exactly the same in every machzor. There was nothing added, nothing subtracted. It's there. The only thing you will see that is different, frankly, is I mentioned on Monday that most of the liturgy, I would say 70-80% of it, is poetry. It is not prose. And what you will see that is different in the Hebrew is mi yichya, mi yamut, mi bekitzo, lo, right? The poetic form is clearly there in the Hebrew. It is also mimicked in the English, because every time that we came across a piece of poetry, we tried to do it in a poetic form in the English as well as in the Hebrew. Okay? And the same goes for Adam Yisodome Afar. Every person's origin is death, is dust. Right? All that stuff. Okay?
I just want to take prerogative as moderator and just point out that one of the things that in my original question and also in Rabbi Kelman's response just now, one of the traditions in the conservative movement and in the historical school of Judaism in particular is to look for the Ur text, is to look for the pure text. Now, were this a conversation about purity of text versus religious experience, we would spend more time on that. But I want to at least make a point of saying that, that the absence of something because it is, quote, merely a legend, right, doesn't actually answer the religious impulse for the legend to be there, nor does it answer the pain of its absence for someone who has derived meaning from it. So one of the challenges, I think, in seeing this as a text is recognizing that it comes from a textual tradition that looks for purity and transmission, not only meaning. Right? And so those are competing impulses. For me, I might have come down a different way, but it's fascinating to see that it managed to be as meaningful as it is. I would say it this way because of how I feel about it. It is as meaningful as it is despite being a conservative Jewish machzer. Right? Because there's something subversive about the meaning that's in there, but there's something authentic about transmitting it purely. Right? Mine might not look as historically grounded. And so, in fact, this is a better framing, perhaps, than I would produce myself. So, other questions? David.
I'm interested if there was a history, not of text, but of instructions.
Of?
Instructions like you do this first, you do this second, etc., through time, and if there was any significant changes through time, that this part of the service was here and this part of it was there, etc. And.
No.
In the. What you said?
No.
No.
Well, listen, shachari to shachari.
No. Within the shachari to something that very, look what happened in the Reform tradition and Yisker.
Yeah.
Yisker is an afternoon service before Neva.
No, that's not accurate. In the Reform tradition, Yisker can be in the afternoon service before Mincha. It doesn't have to be. I mean, there's no halacha from the law folks in the Reform movement that says it's got to be there. What we did, just in response, a quick response, there are certain pieces that are introduced into the machzor that don't appear during a regular shachari service, right? So, for example, the avoda or martyrology. We put it in because what we discovered as we went along was that that's really where it was added in the first place. It was taken out and put someplace else, but that's where it was added in the first place. Another thing I want to just mention very briefly. When we were doing this, we made discoveries that were, for us, really astounding. I can't tell you, for example, how, when we were just in simple translation, when we were translating stuff, when we came to the second paragraph of the Aleinu, it took us 2 hours to translate the first line. Well, because we didn't all understand Aleinu l'shabbat, Alkein nekavelecha, right? L'taken olam, everybody knows what l'taken olam is? Right. But nobody remembers that there are two more words. L'taken olam b'malchut shaddai. With God's kingdom, universe, right? So the question is, well, whose responsibility is that? Is it God's responsibility or is it our responsibility? The Hebrew text is marvelously ambivalent. You can't tell from the Hebrew what that is. When we encountered that, because all of us are sitting around saying, oh, tikkun olam, it's all we gotta do and make the world better and da 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 da, that ain't what it says. And so the question is, how do you, so we spent, first of all, a lot of us
And we're pretty familiar with the text, but until you start translating that stuff and really get down to serious translating of it, you know, it was a shock. So we spent a couple of hours just working on trying to figure out how to convey that ambivalence in an English text. Once after the first hour, which was, oh my God, this isn't what we thought it meant. Okay? Second, let's talk about Kol Nidre and the Elah. When you go to Kol Nidre, after you finish the repetition, after you finish the Amidah, right? All of a sudden, there's this chunk of time between then and the full Kaddish where it appears to be a jumble of unintelligible connections between things. Same thing for Ne'ilah. That is, after you finish the beginning of the Amidah, and all the rabbis know that if you need to stall for time, you put in another one of those piyutim. If you need to shorten it out, well, you jump to Ritzay. Or, you know, you just, right?
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that. Yeah, right.
No, but an executive director put a clock right up there.
So, that's right. And everybody else said, Okay. So what we tried to do was to figure out, what is there a logic between Kol Nidre and the Elah? Because remember, they're the bookends. And what we began to discover, we didn't quite do it as much as some of us wanted it to happen, but what began is that there really is a structure in there. And we began to tease it out a little bit about about the beginnings, about the end. You'll read about it when you look at this. But I just wanted to suggest that this was some of what we were, this is probably why it took us 12 years, but this is one of the reasons that one of the things that we began to discover in there. Okay? What was your second question?
I'm going to let someone else ask.
Okay.
Judy?
Yeah, I have a very non-scholarly question and comment. I love wondering to what extent it was really discussed and thought about, because it's, there's something about the feel of this book, which is really unusual. It's very sensual. I just feel good holding it. And I wonder, was this a major decision, or did somebody have the idea? I mean, it's very complicated.
Okay. A lot of this book, a lot of the design in the book was done by Scott Martin Kosofsky, who is our designer, publisher, friend, really became part of the committee later on. And this was his idea. We didn't, frankly, I didn't know about it till I saw it. And I'm not sure whether some of the other, I want to say one other thing. This is a committee that put this thing together, which means that at certain stages, it went to a couple of people who were doing certain editing. It went to copy editors. It went to proof text editors. It went to the Committee on Jewish Law and Standards. In a certain way, it was out of our hands. So, for example, when each of us took a different section and did the first cut at it, the first cut at it probably is not the same as what the final one is, because with Shema Uvir Choteha, we probably spent 2 years on it. And the reason for that is you've got Shema Uvir Choteha on Rosh Hashanah, you've got it on Yom Kippur, 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. There's a lot in there, and a lot that gets repeated over in different formats. So, and we had to make sure all of it was consistent, yet some of it was the same but different in the different places. So there was, and there's a lot of stuff in here. There's a lot of stuff that we left out. I mean, I had a ton more of comments that never made it in here. And a lot of these comments were then worked on or worked over by all of us on the committee to produce the final text, which we all did agree on. But thanks. I also like to go.
Claire?
So I had a question about the Amidah, where you added in the Imotenu in brackets every time you say Avotenu.
Yes.
And on the one hand, I like that the Imotenu are in there. On the other hand, it's a lot of times. And
It's a lot of what?
Times.
A lot of times. There's a lot of, I mean, I don't know whether it's 10 times, or there's a whole bunch of times where it gets added in. I don't use phone notes.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm just curious what you're thinking, how that,
okay. My thinking on it is actually quite simple. I didn't want it. Okay? I thought Avotena was fine. And I was willing to go along with it. Some of the people on the committee were really quite insistent that we use Imotenu. And there are a bunch of times in here where we bracketed words. The brackets being, there are a lot of congregations who do Imotenu. There are a lot of congregations who don't. Right? How do you meet the needs of all of those congregations? Well, you put it in brackets, right? But the Imotenu is not really the most radical thing that we did. The most radical.
My question is, my other question was, what about Horenu?
Horenu?
Yeah.
You can't think of a more parv word than that. Parent? If I say ancestors, right? If I say Avotenu and Imotenu, I have a picture of who these individuals were. And they were individuals. Elohei Sarah, Elohei Rivka, Elohei Rachel, the God of each of them. It wasn't the God of Avraham v'Sarah. It was the God of Avraham, it was the God of Sarah, it was the God of X, it was all the way through. So it was each of them. Horenu doesn't work for that. Okay?
Well, just to point out that there are other things that are changed in terms of egalitarianism that aren't bracketed. I noticed one of them as I was going through this, I think actually with Claire. Yeah, right before the Amidah and Shacharit, we've said this over and over ourselves. Tilot le'elyon, Baruch u'mvarach, Moshe u'vnei Yisrael l'cha nishira. Moses and the children of Israel sang out to God, but our text here without brackets says Moshe u'miriam. So it's interesting that some things are pointed to as bracketed and some are subsumed.
Right.
Yeah. We probably have time for one more question. So, Shifra.
You said that wasn't the most controversial or radical thing you did, so what was the radical thing?
Well, I'll tell you what the question was. What was the most, I throwaway line, what was the most radical thing that we did? What page? The most radical thing we did was the prayer for Israel.
I'll find it.
Okay. The most radical thing was the prayer for Israel. I strenuously lost a battle. I lost a lot of battles. Not battles. They were really. I can't tell you that these arguments were l'shem shemayim. You have no. This was really wonderful. This was not an academic.
117.
This was not an
117.
This was not an academic committee. That is, it was not an academic committee means that it wasn't a case of one person trying to best another in an argument. This was really an attempt to say, we have congregations. How are we going to make this experience the most relevant for them? So I wanted a completely different prayer for the state of Israel. I have enormous trouble with this whole prayer. And the compromise was one word in brackets. You see it on the second line of Yeshua. Tzur Yisrael Golo, Barech et Medinat Yisrael, bless the state of Israel. And our Sidur Sim Shalom says, Reshit Smichat Ulatenu, the beginning of our redemption. Well, there's another version that's currently going around, which is Shetehe, that it may be the beginning of redemption. One word. We put it obviously in brackets because we felt that we could not change the prayer because too many congregations are really stuck with this version and can't deal with anything else. Most of us did want something different, couldn't fight that battle. So what we did was we put this in Shetehe Reshit Smichat Ulatenu, that it may become, but it isn't right now, the beginning of our redemption. It's a good Berkeley response.
Stu, I just saw that in the New York Times yesterday that Paul Milstein died.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Who? The person who funded a lot of this, Irma and Paul Milstein.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was a huge bit.
You know...
And actually talked about his son, Edward, and Howard.
Really, you know, at the dedication, she was there, he wasn't. And I wondered why, and I just figured, okay. Yeah, I'll take a look.
It was in yesterday's.
In yesterday's Times? Yes. I'll take a look. Well, thank you.
That one of the major funders, and the list on the title page, Irma and Paul Milstein, that Paul Milstein just died. And there was an obituary in the New York Times.
Yesterday.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chevrot, we've done it. Kaddish Rabbanan is on page 41.
Of the Machzor.
Of the Machzor. Let's use it once. It's Kaddish Rabbanan, and then we'll use it for the davening itself. Please rise.
Yitgadal v'yitgada shemei rabba be'almad v'rach v'pei v'amdich mar v'pei v'chaye chol v'yom echol v'chaye echol v'yit Yisrael v'adala v'zman karib v'imru amen yehe shemei rabba mevorach v'olam v'med v'amariah yitbarach v'yishabach v'yivar v'yivraman v'yitnaseh V'yitadar v'yitalek v'yitalal shmeit v'lishah v'yitur L'ayonam v'yikol v'yirchata v'shirata Tushrechata v'yitemata D'amiran v'omar v'imru amen Al Yisrael v'al Rabbanan v'al Tamideho V'al kol Tamidei Tamideho V'al kol man v'osim v'oraita D'iv atra adein v'div v'kol atar v'atar Yehei lahom lachon shlam rabba China v'chisa v'rachamim L'chayin arifin u'mizonar v'icha U'for kadam min kodam v'aluhon v'ishmaya V'imru amen Yehei shlam rabba min shmaya V'chayin tovim aleinu v'al kol Yisrael V'imru amen Oseh shalom v'imrabah U'v'rachamah v'yaseh shalom Aleinu v'al Yisrael v'al kol Yoshei Tevel v'imru amen.
Yashikach. Mazel tov. Yashikach, everyone. We're going to daven Maariv in a minute. We'll need Sidurim for those. They're over there.